Skull and Everett present This Week in Horror.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Everett.
And I'm Sickle, and we're Sickle and Everett. We're the Unhallowed Reviewers. We've missed a couple weeks here.
Holidays.
Holiday landed. Then a little bit of family emergency here on Sickle's side.
You have a family?
Great uncle, like, fell on an infernal stalagmite the other day, and it was bad.
He's just sitting there, like, getting tortured still? I mean, he can't really die again, right?
I mean, like, he just wasn't in good shape. Like, he got this really bad, like, sulfuric infection, and I don't know. It was bad stuff.
I mean, can't get worse than hell, so.
No, I suppose so, yeah.
It turns out 4th of July is a celebrated holiday in hell, because the majority of Americans are here, so. You know.
That's true, and like we love that they have their independence to like you know do more bad stuff, yeah. So that they'll end up here. So
drunk driving accidents, people doing stupid firework stuff, sends them straight to hell.
Oh yeah,
it's pretty calculated.
We were so close with that football player; his hand got blown off. Oh, so close.
All right. So today, I think we're just gonna run through it. We have been seeing a bunch of movies, and we're just gonna talk about them. We're going to do a little bit of news, but this is going to be more of like a movie review podcast. So there will probably be spoilers for everything we're talking about. And just as a kind of heads up, we're probably going to talk about Midsommar, Annabelle Comes Home, Child's Play, Men in Black. So if you have not seen those movies and want to and don't want them spoiled, you know, we'll see you next time, I guess. I don't know. But for the first part, we're going to talk about some other stuff. So there's like two or three things in news. So the first one that I got excited about was apparently Sam Raimi and Bruce Campbell teased that there was going to be some more Evil Dead, because Ash vs. the Evil Dead, the series was pretty cool, I think, as far as giving us that Evil Dead feel. Did you see any of that?
I did. I was able to see most of the first season, and I think it does do a great job of capturing that like campy, self-aware campiness that the originals had, especially like it definitely, I think, follows more of like the Army of Darkness feel, even though it's set in modern times, obviously, as opposed to him being thrown back in history. I got more of like it was more embracing of the comedic side of things, which is good. But yeah, I was able to see most of it, and I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, so that'll be cool. And I think Sam Raimi said that Evil Dead movie that was done by Alvarez, Freddy Alvarez, was was part of he said it's part of the Evil Dead universe, it's just not part of Bruce Campbell's storyline in that universe, which is the greatest way to approach that question ever, you know, I think.
I agree. That's a really cool way to look at it, because now you're like, oh, I thought this was a remake, but like to just be able to embrace somebody else's picture of what you created, but like embracing it so much that you're like, oh no, this could still exist in our universe, it's just not part of Bruce Campbell's things. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, there's the Evil Deads in that universe, so it's like, it doesn't matter what, but I really like that remake / sequel / movie in the universe. I thought it was pretty great and pretty gory and pretty awesome.
It was one of the better like remake-y type things that we've seen, I think, definitely.
And so It Chapter 2 has had its trailer, and everyone's talking about how it has some of the bloodiest scenes in Hollywood, but like that movie, the new Evil Dead, has that blood rain scene that gets pretty bloody. So
it's true. That's actually, I believe the article that I read, it says that currently technically holds the record, that scene.
Mm-hmm.
And this one from It is supposedly gonna beat that record.
Well, I'm excited for that too, man.
We'll see. Yeah.
All right. So, you know, if you like Evil Dead, keep an ear out or eye out for that. The next thing I kind of want to touch on a little bit is I've been surfing Prime again. Amazon Prime is an interesting animal. I'm getting kind of bored of Netflix. They're not really doing a lot of horror stuff at the moment, as far as I can tell. Maybe you've seen differently, but Prime has a bunch of...
Well, The Perfection wasn't that long ago.
I guess it was long enough ago that, like, and there's nothing else that's come out, or none of the horror on Netflix has changed enough that I'm sticking on Netflix, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, it was The Perfection, and then there was, like, nothing else that came that was new. But Amazon Prime has a lot of weird, older movies and just kind of weird stuff on it that it's fun to watch. And so, I just watched, you said this right earlier, but I can't remember how to say it, Dibbuk Box?
Dibbuk
Box. And so, the first thing I want to say is, there's found footage is a really cool genre for me. I generally like found footage more because, and if you do it right, it feels more real, and it's more scary. I think. Thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that, like, you know, the approach of found footage, it provides those tight angles. It puts you engages the audience in a different way. So it can definitely make things scarier. I think for me, like, the perfection of execution from, like, entirely just a scare standpoint, I think the, like, Rec quarantine movies do the best job.
Yeah, they're really good at it.
Yeah, and I kind of go back and forth on it because I also do feel like found footage at times is a cheap way to make a movie. Mm-hmm. And, like, most of the time, or I think a lot of times it's abused.
Yeah.
To where it's just like, here, now I can make a movie and say that I've made one. I don't know.
Yeah, I agree. I definitely agree with that. So the interesting part about Davik Box is, it's supposedly based on, like, a real story, like most things are, but they stage it as this guy is, like, a YouTuber, and he bought a box, and he's, like, kind of monitoring the stuff happening around him in the box, and a lot of it's done with, like, stationary cameras instead of moving camera, and so it's like he's filming YouTube videos for, like, the first half of it, and the second half he's got cameras around his house tracking what's happening. And, I mean, it was only, like, 90 minutes, so that was kind of nice. It was kind of short, but it wasn't bad. There's some pretty creepy scenes in it, and weird stuff happens, and they really go... I couldn't find any information on the guy, Chris something, who is the main character, but they supposedly say, like, he is, like, a real guy who did this, and now he's, like, scarred for life, and... They, like, really went hard into, like, this is real, like, don't do this. They, like, say at the end of the movie that they did this for educational, instructional purposes, and, like, why you shouldn't do this. And I thought that was kind of an interesting angle, you know?
Yeah, I'd be curious to see how far they take that, because, I mean, obviously that's a pretty popular thing in found footage. In general, that's usually how it's treated, is this is a real event, this is a thing that's real. So, like, kind of taking it to the point of, like, this isn't entertainment, this is...
Like a warning.
A warning.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. That seems kind of like a Poughkeepsie-type situation.
Or, like, there's importantly a movie coming out, maybe, and this might not be the same thing that they're doing here with the Davik Box, but the Momo Challenge is getting a movie, and that was kind of one of those things that's, like, a lot of people were talking about it to have people not do it instead of have people do it, so... I don't know, but it was pretty cool. I'd say, like, it's worth watching. It's only 90 minutes, so it's hard to, like, get too down on something that doesn't take up that much of your time, you know?
For sure. You bring up the Momo thing, and I hear that they're going to make a Momo movie is Slender Man, and it was terrible, so I'm just not, I don't know.
Yeah, I agree.
We'll see.
But another thing Netflix is doing soon is they're coming out with this show called The Boys. The Boys is about a group of normal and semi-superpowered people who actually, like, punish superheroes when they're out of control. And, like, not super villains, but, like, when superheroes get too cocky, like, they're, like, there to, like, counteract them. I mean, it's this kind of interesting show, but normally Garth Ennis is not... I'm not a huge fan of Garth Ennis as a comic book writer. A lot of his stuff is a little bit too, like, cynical for me, I guess is the right word. But the show looks really interesting.
I remember pretty vividly us sitting in on that panel with him, and him just bashing superheroes for basically an hour.
Yeah.
And it wasn't the best experience. I mean...
And his best comic arcs are, like, Punisher and Nick Fury, which aren't even superheroes, and that's probably why he likes them the most.
It's true, yeah. And, like, I mean, because isn't he the one that wrote, like, Punisher Kills Marvel or whatever, the Marvel Universe or something like that?
I don't remember, but probably.
I'm pretty sure he's done something like that, yeah.
But, yeah, so that's coming out soon, so keep an eye out for that, because that'll be pretty fun. But let's get into the movies that we've seen. I think we'll probably be able to talk about those the rest of the time. Let's chat about Midsommar. So if you're still listening and you've seen some of the movies, but not all of them, there probably will be Midsommar spoilers right now. So feel free to, you know, skip forward or something. But, you know, spoiler alert.
Yes. So I don't know, like, I had some preconceived notions going in and kind of like some certain expectations. Going into Midsommar, I feel like I was expecting a grueling experience, like a psychologically, mentally, spiritually grueling experience, like Hereditary was.
I don't really find Hereditary, like, spiritually grueling. That's interesting that you say that.
I just think it's very draining on the body.
Okay, I see what you mean now. Okay, gotcha.
And I just, I don't know. And like, so I was kind of prepared for that in Midsommar. And one thing I was preparing myself for was the 2.5 hour runtime, where I'm like, man, okay, Hereditary was hard enough, but I have to go through this, you know, for, you know, however extra time it was, probably like an extra half hour compared to Hereditary. And so, you know, I was kind of preparing myself for that. And I was worried, or not worried, but I was going into it a little concerned about the runtime. That's not, I would love to see like a 2.5 hour, like, I don't know, movie on like The Relic or Mimic or something. Like, it's not like I'm against 2.5 hour horror movies, but with this subject matter of, like, you know, this kind of, this, like, you know, cult that you can't really tell what's going on, it's like, I feel like this is gonna get, it's gonna start to lull. And anyways, so that was kind of my impression going in. I feel like it didn't the content did not justify the runtime for me. I do think it was a great film. I have very little interest in watching it again. I thought the characters were okay. I thought a couple, I don't know about you. Oh, Ifrit, I would love your opinion on this. So, like, one thing I experienced in my theater is that I feel like a ton of people were laughing in scenes that Ari Aster, director Ari Aster, did not intend to be funny.
That happened in mine, too, but I thought it was pretty, I don't ever like to assume that someone intended or didn't intend for a scene to be funny, because it, to do that assumes that they're pretentious enough to think that they know what people will laugh at, and nobody knows that. That's the whole point of comedy, I think. But, like, there were people laughing at scenes where I was like, this is an interesting thing to laugh at. I'm going to participate. Like, and that it was kind of an interesting part of that experience for me. It didn't ruin it for me at all, but
I thought I would just say that, like, the my justification for him, for it, the scenario most likely being that he didn't think it was funny, is that I didn't hear anybody make a peep during Hereditary.
It's not the same movie. It's not the same movie, though. Like,
no, but people are getting really caught up
on this. Like,
no, it's a very similar style, though. It's shot in a very similar way. The characters are developed in a very similar way. It still has Ari Aster's approach to it. I mean, you could argue that, like, that you can't shoehorn Scorsese into one category, because he's done, like, Shutter Island and then Wolf on Wall Street. I think that's right. And, like, those are, like, two completely different movies, opposite sides of the spectrum. So it's not like you can, it's fair to shoehorn a director into a specific place, but I felt a lot of similarities between the two movies.
But if you went into Midsommar thinking it was going to be Hereditary, the same style of horror that Hereditary was, I think you are setting yourself up for failure. Like, it is very, very clear from the trailers and the previews and any kind of information on Midsommar that it is a folk horror movie, and not, like, and there's not a lot of those out there that people generally attend. Oh, sorry. There's not a lot of those out there that I tend to enjoy that much, because generally they're super slow burns. But I found this movie really interesting. Like, I really like, it's one of the only movies where I really like the way they did, like, drugs and using psychedelics and things like that. I thought that was really cool. All the images of things moving when people are kind of high on drugs is really interesting, and it gives a little bit of depth to the, like, the screen. I thought that, like, I went on a journey. I'm watching this as a normal human and not someone who's, like, overanalyzing every scene. It was fun to go on the journey where you saw the main character as kind of, like, an antagonist, and then this roles flip over halfway through the movie where, like, everybody she's around is actually an asshole, and she's the one that actually needs to go on this journey to, like, figure herself out. I thought that was a really cool part of that movie. I really liked the, like, juxtaposition between a lot of, like, Western culture versus, like, you know, non-Western culture that was in it. And just to, like, kind of see how they put characters in there specifically to be the characters that would react to certain situations in a certain way, to give an opinion, like, a juxtaposition of, like, how culture can just completely change your, like, sense of morality and ethics. And I thought that was a really cool part of it. I don't really think it was all that scary, and I almost wouldn't even classify it as, like, a horror film that much. I mean, the only, like, really horrible scenes are when they find that dude in the chicken coop, which is pretty sweet.
I love that scene.
And then, I don't know, I'm trying to think of any more.
Well, the jump, the two jumping.
Yeah, so
is pretty violent.
But I didn't. Yeah, so I thought that was like maybe gory. Is that? That's not right. It wasn't that gory. It was pretty gory. I disagree. I don't think it was that gory. Like, I mean, that's what would happen. That's literally what would happen, though. Like, they didn't put more blood.
That doesn't mean it's not gory. That doesn't mean it's talked about this.
Like, that doesn't. I mean, that doesn't really seem that gory when it's like clean gore. Like, there's no extraneous gore or. They weren't trying to make it more gory than it was. It was realistic, and I don't really find that gory.
I guess I disagree with that, because I think that the opening scene to Saving Private Ryan is very gory.
I've never seen it.
Just because it's... Okay. Well, just because it's realistic doesn't mean that it's not gory. Like, I mean, like, in the beginning of Saving Private Ryan, there's people getting their appendages blown off and, like, faces smashed in and, like, all this stuff.
But that's, like, that's like accumulated gore. All that happened in this scene is two people died of a normal way of dying if you were to jump off a cliff.
Both of them got their heads smashed in.
Yeah.
And their legs broken in half. That's gore. Like, I don't know why you would classify that as gore.
It didn't trigger the gore reflex in me, though. Like, it wasn't something where I was like... The scene later on did. Like, I think. Because it was, like, body mutilation kind of thing. But this was just, like, it was just normal. I don't know. I didn't find it that gory. The movie overall... Except for that.
Oh no, definitely not overall.
But
yeah.
I don't know.
I.
Good.
Oh, go ahead.
No, it's your turn.
Oh well, I was just gonna say that I definitely agree with you on certain elements of the film, like the nuance of the characters and everything. I do disagree with you quite a bit on the similarities between it and Hereditary.
I'm saying there's no similarities.
Yeah, and I think that's crazy because, like, they're both cults.
Oh, whoa. Find out later. I definitely don't think that they were a cult in Midsommar. I don't think that they were a cult at all. So that's a hard line for me. Like, that is just a practicing, like, Scandinavian religion. Like, that's not a cult. That's where I'm drawing the line there for, like, my argument is we're never going to agree on this if you think that they're a cult in Midsommar.
Yeah, I definitely disagree with you. Okay. That's a cult.
No, not even every other religion in the world is a cult.
that's just not the definition of what a cult is. But that's I mean, we can agree to disagree on that. But I think that they're both about cults. I think that they both use that perspective to show nuance in the characters. I think the characters are disturbed. The plot is
you think
dark
that the people practicing that religion in that movie are disturbed.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, I 100% disagree. Like,
they mutilated people.
They killed people who wanted to die.
No, the guy in the chicken coop did not want to die.
Well, but that was part of their religion.
But that's mutilation. You just said that they don't like hurt people. Like,
what is circumcision?
People. Not killing people.
It's mutilation.
It's not
the guy in
people.
The chicken coop was still alive.
Not killing people. He was burned. They were all burned.
Eventually.
They burn somebody alive.
But we all die eventually.
All the corpses. They burn people alive.
I don't know. I disagree. Yeah. Not a cult. Anyway. Okay.
I think you'd have a hard time finding somebody to agree with you on that one.
I think Ari Aster agrees with me.
You don't think he calls it a cult?
No, I think he got interviewed and didn't call it a cult. He says he didn't see it as a cult. It was just a Scandinavian religion. A lot of religions out there are different than, like, they do have violence, and they do have sacrifice, and those things do happen, and it's religious, and I don't know, I don't think just because it's a religion that seems different makes it a cult. Like, they also sacrificed a bunch of their own people, so it wasn't like they were
What's
just killing outsiders.
What's your definition of a cult? Well, no, but cults sacrifice their own people, too.
Are you summoning a demon? You're a cult.
Like Jonestown? Jonestown, for example?
I don't remember.
See, I don't think that's the definition. I feel like... because I feel like Jonestown was a cult, and they weren't trying to summon a demon or anything.
Well, then they weren't doing it right.
They all did a mass suicide.
Well, see, but there's no mass suicides or anything in Midsommar. Like, they're
no,
just
but
practicing
I would consider
religion.
A cult that sacrifices... I would consider a cult that sacrifices people for the betterment of themselves. Like,
hey,
in a way that...
It's not the betterment of themselves. It's the whole world is how they see it.
How do they, like, because I mean, like, I don't feel like you get a direct definition of, or a direct reasoning for why they're doing everything they're
didn't
doing.
They're saying they're sacrificing people to appease, like, the god, of the earth god, or, like, whatever, towards the end. Like, this...
Yeah. Well, then I guess I would like your opinion if I need you to watch The Apostle.
I will. I will. I'm actually going to watch that sometime this weekend, I think. But
and tell me if you think that's a cult or not.
Okay. I'll probably say no, but
probably. We'll see. Yeah, I think based on your definition, you'll probably say no.
All right, but I
just like to.
What I'm excited for about Midsommar. Sorry, and we can. If you want to, do you want to talk about before I derailed you? What were you going to say?
Oh no, that was it. I think it was that.
Okay. Ari Aster said that the movie, the movie was originally rated NC-17. And I want to see that version.
I mean, it was pretty dang close.
I mean, just
following the MPAs. No, just following the MPAA's rule, oh, okay. Tight rules on nudity. I'm just talking from a technical perspective.
Oh, yeah. For sure. For sure.
Yeah, that part was pretty intense. I mean, according to the MPAA.
Yeah.
So yeah, you're right. I would be interested to see what that means.
Yeah.
What his original cut was.
And supposedly it's an extended cut. And so I was like, I think the 2.5 hour thing didn't even come up in my mind. So just as another reason that, like, maybe we're seeing it differently is you told me it was 2.5 hours after I'd bought tickets for it. And so, like, it really didn't affect my, like, going into it, you know, which is an interesting thing. Because there are movies I've watched and I'm like, why is this so long? Why is this still going? But we've spent so much time on Midsommar, we need to keep going. Let's talk about Annabelle Comes Home. So, again, spoilers for Annabelle Comes Home if you haven't seen it. I thought this movie was cool. I love that every so often the Wan movie universe gets expanded, and now they can do like other new movies from the movies from the ghosts that come out in Annabelle Comes Home, which was like the ferryman and the beast of Bray Road basically, and then there's like another ghost I can't remember the name of, but yeah, I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I actually have a piece that, I don't know, I wasn't able to get up and running, but, like, I was actually comparing Annabelle and the James Wan universe to, like, the MCU, and, yeah. Like, how, like, the MCU is this, like, super successful thing, and, like, oh my gosh, it's the, you know, it's this, like, state-of-the-art, wonderful thing, and it really is, it's amazing what they've accomplished with Marvel and everything, and, like, everybody's tried to copy it, and everybody's failed, like, DC, blah, 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 all those people have failed to try to copy what they've done, except James Wan, who's quietly just been doing it for as long as the MCU's been doing it.
Right, like, it's subtle, it's just, too. Because you don't really get it unless you watched all of it, where you start from Insidious, and then go through the Conjuring. Thank you.
Conjuring.
And then that introduces a whole door into the other universe, just like Avengers kind of opened up the door for like all these other, you know, Marvel movies.
Guardians of the Galaxy and stuff. Yeah. They're just like slight little differences in how they've approached it, and like I feel like one thing that Marvel may suffer from, we'll see. But, like, it had kind of a big conclusion to its initial, you know, set. Where, like, you know, Thanos is gone. Now you have this big epic thing where, you know, now you're losing a bunch of your key stars, you know. And so we're going to have to see how the health of the MCU continues from here. And James Wan doesn't have that problem because there is no big ending. It's just, let's introduce more and more horror icons and keep dropping these little horror characters and introducing new things and see what sticks, and then we'll make a movie off of that one.
Yeah.
And like he just keeps it gives him a lot of like ability to just move around, malleability with his plots, and like being able to piece together like different movies, and then you just be a little clever and just like throw little hints of like, oh, this is connected to Annabelle in this way, and this is connected to the demon from Insidious in this way, and like you just throw little stuff in there and let people connect all the dots of the universe.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I think it's really clever. And one thing that I thought was kind of funny, I kind of did just a really quick average of like box office numbers between the MCU and like, so there are a handful of like MCU movies that had a budget of 170 and like
170 million.
Okay. Yeah, 170 million, and then like a like box office haul of like 280. And then you'd have a James Wan movie that has a budget of like $17 million and a haul of like 120 or something.
So like per capita, they're making more money per dollar than like Marvel movies.
Oh no, it's like a far, it's like a low risk high reward.
Yeah.
And as opposed to high risk high reward for the Marvel stuff, and it's working for them because they are getting the high reward. But James Wan can have like three movies fail and they would still make their money back and they can keep
playing. Right. And that's the thing is like suckers like us don't, like everybody can watch the movie differently. Like some people are legitimately scared by some of those movies. Some people will see the cliche things that are happening but care about the content. Some people like the setting. Other people like that it's based off of like real, potentially real things. And so like it's like shotgun approach, but it's like a shotgun where you're firing like candy at people instead of like bullets. So I agree. I think it's great what they're doing, and they can keep going for as long as they want, and I will keep paying the money to make kind of like easy to watch horror films that build its own universe. Because the best part about any movie is the ability to see more of it if you like it, and being able to expand a universe like that is amazing.
Yeah, and I agree. I have a little bit of concern over like the predictability of the model. It's the same problem I have with the MCU, but I'm still enjoying them. So right now, I'm just enjoying, like until it really becomes a problem where I'm like, oh my gosh, I know exactly what's gonna happen next every time. Like,
you don't watch it for the story though. I mean, it's jump scares, it's creepiness. Like,
oh no, but that's what I mean. Like, even the jump scares are set up, like in such a way where like you know, like now in a James Wan movie, they're gonna pan left and you're gonna. Like, the whole point is that it's going to pan left, and you think you're going to see something, but you don't. And then it pans right, and then you still don't see something, and then it hits you. Like, there's still, like,
but they could just simply, like, look, this is the issue I have with that, is that Dead Space is a video game where they do stuff like that. In Dead Space 1, the entire elevators are always safe. In Dead Space 2, they are no longer safe, and you don't know that right away, though, because you're tearing something. But all they have to do is make elevators safe again in the third game, which I don't know if they did because I never played it, but you're still apprehensive. Like, the apprehension is going to be there, and you're thinking about it. You're sitting there either trying to guess, worried about it, apprehensive about it, and that's, they have you. Like, that's emotion. And if you,
it's true.
You're never going to know. Like, if you think you know, it's like playing rock, paper, scissors, and you're like, they're going to throw rock, but they know I'll throw paper, but then they'll throw scissors, and they know I'll throw blah, 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 right? It's like, this guessing game.
If you don't know, now you know.
Exactly. But let's talk about one last one for the last few minutes. Child's Play. I love Child's Play. It was great. I thought it was awesome how they took it in a new direction. I think Mark Hamill did a great job. The kid actors did a good job. Aubrey Plaza. It was good. It was fantastic.
Yeah, I thought that... I actually thought the two main characters, like Aubrey Plaza and her son, I thought they were kind of a means to an end. I don't think that they were really explored in a lot of depth. I thought that the detective was the funnest part.
He was pretty cool,
as far
yeah.
as like human characters go. I know that there's been a lot of rumblings that if you're going to go this far off course of what the original Child's Play was, then you should not have made it a remake. But I am definitely a proponent that, like, if you're going to do a remake, put a twist on it. Like, what's the point of rebooting something if you're not actually going to do something different?
And not just a twist on the end, but, like, a twist on the whole take, which this one was technology. Like, Buddy is supposed to be your Alexa. It's just a doll form, and that's kind of weird, but who cares? Like, it's still Child's Play, right? So
It was 100% what a remake should be, because it kept... everything this it kept all of the skeleton the same. So it kept killer doll that starts to kill people that is owned by a boy with his mom, who they're, you know, single mom trying to make it on their own in this an apartment. Like, everything else is the same. You just changed a key element that sends the whole story through a little different spiral than the original.
It's like time.
And it's like, that's exactly what a remake is.
Yeah, and like, they set it in a time that's relevant for now. I mean, if they would have made Iron Man as the old Iron Man comic, it would have never done as well. Like, they had to set it in Afghanistan. They had to make it into a modern take on, like, the war. They did this, too, in here. Like, there's a commentary on, like, you know, external labor and things like that at the very beginning, and like commentary on how technology rules our lives, blah, blah, blah. But you can't just say like, anybody who's wanted the old movie and wanted The Possession, I think you just go watch the old movie again. Understand, it's pretty classic. You don't need to remake it, you know?
No, I agree completely. Like, if you're just going to redo, like, the journey that Chucky takes in the first one, because, like, I mean, the first Child's Play doesn't have that much horror in it until pretty much three-quarters of the way through, if not longer.
Like, you just push that lady out of the window pretty early.
He does, but, like, that's almost it. Like, the rest of it, he's spending a lot of time, like, how do I get out of this body? Like, trying to figure this stuff out with all the voodoo and everything. And then the real horror scenes don't come till the very end. Like, if it was just a straight remake and you're sitting there watching him go through all that again, it's like, why can't I just watch the original? Mm-hmm. Like, you're seeing the essential development of Chucky in a completely different way, where you're seeing him being entirely innocent at the beginning, and then he's corrupted along the way with his faulty programming and his experiences. So, like, it just gives you a completely different look, and I liked it.
Yeah, me too. So I think we're mixed on Midsommar. We both really liked Annabelle Comes Home and Child's Play. So, there we go. But thanks for listening. We appreciate it. Let us know what you think of the movies we reviewed today. You know, get excited about news we presented. If you have any comments on any of the stuff that we're talking about, or you disagree or hate it, let us know so we can argue on the internet like everyone else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what it's for.
All right. Well, see you next time, everyone.
See ya.